This is Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. As you've been hearing, there's been what authorities are calling a terrorist attack in Barcelona today. A van swerved into pedestrians on a crowded street in the city. The Catalan government says 13 people have died and at least 50 have been injured. One suspect has been arrested. Police are still looking for the driver of the van. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has tweeted that the priority is tending to the wounded in Las Ramblas and facilitating the work of security forces. President Trump has tweeted, quote, "The United States condemns the terror attack in Barcelona, Spain, and will do whatever is necessary to help. Be tough and strong. We love you." WBUR and NPR will be keeping you updated on the latest in the Barcelona van attack, both here, on air, and online at WBUR.org. Earlier today, President Trump tweeted about matters closer to home. Over three tweets, he said this, quote, "Sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments. You can't change history, but you can learn from it. Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, who's next? Washington? Jefferson? So foolish. Also, the beauty that is being taken out of our cities, towns, and parks will be greatly missed and never able to be comparably replaced." The president's tweets come in the wake of his many controversial statements since the violence in Charlottesville. And they also come amid the removal this week of Confederate monuments by the mayor of Baltimore and the removal by activists of a statue of a Confederate soldier in North Carolina. But it's not only our southern neighbors who have to deal with Confederate monuments. Here in Boston, the state's only Confederate monument has been boarded up since June, when the governor said he wanted it taken down. The state is trying to figure out how to remove it because it's part of a national historic landmark. The granite block, which sits outside Fort Warren on George's Island in Boston Harbor, lists 13 Confederate soldiers who died there as prisoners. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you make of the push to remove Confederate monuments? Should these markers and statues come down? Should Boston remove its marker? Or should these monuments be allowed to stand but be accompanied by additional information and context? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Joining me now on the line for more on the Boston Monument and its historical context is Boston historian Barbara Berenson. She's the author of Boston in the Civil War, Hub of the Second Revolution, and Walking Tours of Civil War Boston, Hub of Abolitionism. Barbara, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Barbara, first tell us about this monument on George's Island. It's been boarded up since June. Why is it there at all?
Well, it was erected in 1963 by an organization in the South called the United Daughters of the Confederacy. So the first interesting thing about it is that it was erected in 1963 as part of the centennial of the American Civil War, with a message being sent by the United Daughters of the Confederacy in the South to the people of a place like Massachusetts that they wanted to recall or remember this war as what they called the War Between the States. So I would begin with that, that the timing is very important.
Yeah, you mentioned that the first line of the marker reads, "During the War Between the States." Explain that language.
Well, that language has been for probably close to the 150 years since the Civil War, a way in which Southerners, or at least I shouldn't say Southerners, a way in which Confederate sympathizers have chosen to portray the Civil War as somehow a war between the states as if they both stood on morally equal ground, when, of course, first of all, it was a war initiated by the South to preserve the institution of slavery. And secondly, they were not states at all because they had seceded from the Union and were trying to form a separate entity called the Confederacy.
Now, do you think this marker should come down? And if so, where would you put it?
As far as where I would put it, I would put any Civil War monument into a museum, an appropriate place where it is explained as part of our history with important contextual information explaining what it commemorates, why it was erected, the entire story. That would be my suggestion for really virtually any Confederate monument that there is that I can think of. There may be some instances in which something can be explained on site, and George's Island is actually kind of ironically potentially one of those, because this memorial is so small. You could put something large as it, for instance, next to it and explain an accurate story. But in many instances, and certainly the ones that are receiving national attention, that would be impossible. These are statues on top of pedestals, on top of pillars, and so forth.
Barbara, stand by. I want to bring in our other guests. With me in the studio is Michael Jeffries, Associate Professor of American Studies at Wellesley and author of Paint the White House Black, Barack Obama and the Meaning of Race in America. Professor Jeffries, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Also with us on the line is Al Brophy. He's professor of law at the University of Alabama and author of University, Court, and Slave, Pro-Slavery Thought in Southern Colleges and Courts and the Coming of Civil War. Professor Brophy, welcome.
Glad to be with y'all.
So I want to ask both of you first, what is your reaction to Trump's tweets earlier today? Michael, we'll start with you.
Well, I think the tweets and some of the statements from the president are really sort of smaller issues within a much grander story that our historian on the phone just sort of clued us into. And in particular, when it comes to the issue of history around these monuments, she mentioned the erection of the one in Boston in 1963. And the Southern Poverty Law Center has a study about when so many of these monuments went up. And if you look at the history, they cluster around two specific historical periods, around the turn of the 20th century and during the 1950s and 60s in the height of the Civil Rights Movement.
And the turn of the 20th century, that was right about the time when Jim Crow laws were being codified,
that's
correct?
Exactly right. So we have to understand, right, that the purpose of erecting these monuments in public spaces was to send a message to people who were fighting for the dignity of the country and for the dignity of all people through civil rights that this country is a white country, that white supremacy is the ruling ideology. So it's always been a means to intimidate and to terrorize. That's what the monuments are supposed to symbolize. And I think that's the broader discussion we should be having.
Professor Brophy, what do you make of all of what Trump tweeted earlier today?
It's the one, in many ways laughable, but the one thing I focused on in his tweet, which I wish he would focus on more, is the you can learn from history part. And, you know, as Michael Jeffries points out, I think there's an awful lot of lessons that we can learn about why the monuments were put up, what they meant at the time, and I wish we would focus on them as a teaching device for today rather than sort of these comparisons to, you know, Jefferson and Washington, I think, distract from the key issue of what these monuments are about and what we should do about them.
I'm going to turn to some of our listeners now. We have James from Needham. James, what do you think about these Confederate statues and whether or not they should stay up? James?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I personally think that the statues are really great history lessons, and they point to a time in our country that existed and is part of our history, and rather than take them down and act like it didn't happen, use them as historical lessons. And I think these statues should stay up or be brought into some type of museum with more context and more explanation. However, I do believe when you have hate groups such as the neo-Nazis and the KKK using them as symbols of hate in a country that they would rather see, then that's when you have a real problem, and I see that as grounds for taking them down. However, as historical landmarks, I think they should be preserved and explained rather than taken down.
And we also have Patrick from Arlington, who has another viewpoint. Patrick, what do you think of the Confederate statues and what should happen to them in the future?
Hi there. Thanks very much for having me on. I'm actually an immigrant from Ireland 30 years ago, mind you, naturalized citizen. I'm a historian. What really struck me, what still strikes me to this day, is we have all these monuments, I think close to 700, and they're dedicated to people who wanted to leave the Union. They committed treason, but yet we have all these monuments. Now, as a historian, someone who loves the past, I think it's very important that, you know, I don't want to see them being destroyed. I think it would be appropriate to put them in museums. But I think the point a lot of us as Americans are missing is, why were those monuments initially erected? Excuse me.
Yeah, and I think Professor,
for me, it's white supremacy. Mm-hmm. It's you know, know, you had a group of people who shot at the Stars and Stripes, and they committed treason.
I hear you, Patrick. Thank you. And I think Professor Jeffries has gone into some of that context. And there you have two different views from listeners. And listeners out there, if you want to comment on this issue, go ahead and call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to turn back to Professor Jeffries and Professor Brophy. You hear two sides of this. You know, they're great teaching devices, sort of keep them up, and then also the side of maybe put them in museums. You know, who should decide? Because they certainly weren't erected by sort of a consensus, like these monuments should go up. So who should decide on the future of these monuments, and how should those decisions be made? After all, we've had some torn down in the dead of night and some torn down by activists. I'll start with you, Michael.
Well, I think you're starting to see local government make some of those tough decisions. And, you know, I want to return to this point about teaching and the teaching power of these monuments. The mayor of New Orleans, Mitch Landrieu, had an issue with this in his city where he took down a Confederate monument. And one of the things that he pushed back on was that these monuments are not great teaching tools, that they actually disguise the history and distort the history and don't tell the story that we need to hear with any sort of complexity or historical accuracy. So if that's what you're interested in, right, preserving history, a museum is a much better way to do that. Heck, a book is a much better way to do that, right? We're not saying erase the history books. If that's your real issue, engaging the history, there are plenty of responsible ways to do that that don't involve symbols of intimidation and white supremacy being displayed and publicly funded in spaces that all of your citizenry and inhabitants have to walk through every day.
Al, I want to hear your response to that, especially because you wrote in a Newsweek article earlier this year that, and I'm going to quote you, "If we take down these monuments, we facilitate forgetting the bad old days and run a serious risk of whitewashing history and making it easy to forget the era of slavery and what followed the era of slavery." You've also suggested that counter monuments be added nearby. So I'd like you to respond to what Michael said and then...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I agree with much of what Michael said. The monument by it, the Robert E. Lee Monument in Charlottesville by itself tells a very incomplete story. I would think we should add maybe counter monuments or certainly context so that people who walk by that statue can understand why that statue was put up in 1924. They are reminded that the people who were in power in 1924 in Charlottesville thought it was appropriate to commemorate the era of civil war and the war to maintain slavery.
I want to challenge you, though, on that counter monument that you're suggesting.
Sure.
I mean, do you really think that would be effective? I mean, I see sort of the Confederate monument sort of taking center stage, so to speak, and then you have this counter monument off to the side. I just don't see them being given equal weight, considering that the Confederate monument has been there and is established and sort of being given pride of place in public areas.
Question. So, I mean, I think that's the challenge for us is to try and figure out what kind of monument will create a dialogue. In Talbot County, Maryland, for instance, there's a statue in front of the courthouse, a monument to Confederate soldiers, and then they recently placed a counter monument, which was a statue of Frederick Douglass, who had been enslaved in Talbot County. I think that's exactly the kinds of monuments we want to have that begin to people, you know, put monuments in discussion and begin to get people talking about sort of, well, why was it that a century ago people in this county, you know, were putting up monuments to the era of slavery? They could alternatively have just taken that other monument down, and then there would be, you know, no public commemoration or monument to the era of civil war, and people would not be thinking about, well, geez, my ancestors here in Talbot County were not just fought in on the side of the South in the Civil War, but subsequently supported that. I think that's the kind of discussion that we want to get. Taking down a monument is a yes-no decision, and I think what's super important is continuing the discussion so that each generation, everybody walking past Monument Avenue begins to say, well, why is it that there's this huge statue of Robert E. Lee?
It's interesting. Other countries who have sort of horrific histories have chosen different ways to deal with how they memorialize that history. And I think Jamie from Jamaica Plain wants to talk about sort of what Germany and Poland have done in the ways in which they memorialize what happened in their countries during World War II. Jamie, what do you have to say about the context, the larger, broader, worldwide context of this issue?
Well, if you go into Poland or Germany, you can go to Buchenwald war camp. You can go to Auschwitz death camp. And there, they're obviously there to remind people what National Socialism was about and what Nazis did to people. But they're also there to really, you know, memorialize the thousands and millions of people who died and perished at the hands across Europe and at those individual places. And these Confederate statues don't do that. They just tell the one story of what the white supremacy was about. It doesn't have anything, any reflection or any monument whatsoever towards the slaves. And so by putting up counter monuments, it's the same thing as if you were to put up a monument to National Socialism in Berlin and then say, oh, you know what, we should put one for all the people who died in concentration camps at the hands of National Socialism. So the counter doesn't make sense, and having it up there on their own doesn't make sense. So they should all come down.
Barbara, as a historian, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, as I said, I really do favor them being removed to museums. I have the same concern with context that you yourself raised, which is if you have this big statue on a pedestal, I don't really know what kind of counter or sign or whatever one could erect that would possibly adequately give a context. So that's one concern I have. And the other is the practical concern of where we are in this nation today. And, of course, one of the amazing things about our nation's history is that 150 years later, we still don't have one consistent memory about the Civil War, what it was about and why it was fought. And so these memorials, as we see, are being used and have been used by current white supremacists as weapons to their cause. And so that I think there's an additional argument why they ought not to remain. As far as just going back to one earlier question, one of the callers called about, or maybe you asked, Shira, how one would decide who should do it, how to do it. I mean, one thing we've seen in recent years when some colleges and universities have faced questions about renaming buildings and so forth, I know that Yale, at least, and probably some others, have come up with statements of principles to help guide them through these decisions, which I think, in many cases, have been very thoughtfully crafted.
Now, one of the arguments President Trump has made for keeping Confederate statues in place followed this line of thinking. If we take down Lee's statue, what's next? Here's President Trump speaking at an impromptu press conference Tuesday afternoon at Trump Tower in New York.
Many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Michael, I've got to ask you, what's your take? I mean, is there a false equivalency there?
Yeah, it's many others have pointed out the false equivalency. I think that, you know, the travesty really is that it's not immediately apparent to more listeners, right? That our history lessons are not being taught in such a way that the difference for people between Lee and Washington is immediately recognizable. And that's part of the problem, right? Lee was indicted after the South lost the war. He was only not executed because Ulysses Grant intervened on his behalf. His entire legacy is going to war and being willing to murder people for the cause of slavery. That is what the Confederacy was about when South Carolina seceded. Their statement of war, their declaration of war, was a defense of slavery. So there's really no ambiguity there.
Yeah, and I want to turn to the callers again. Steve from Chatham, you have some thoughts on Washington, Jefferson, and Lee. Tell me what you're thinking about these Confederate monuments.
Well, just like your guest there, I agree that Lee and Washington are not exactly the same, but they were both rebels, and just because Washington won and Lee lost, I don't think that should be the criteria for deciding whether they're comparable. But I appreciate the fact that you're bringing it up for a discussion, and it should be considered and not just everything gets thrown away and decide later on what we should attempt.
I want to turn to another caller, Alex from Medford. You see a bigger issue here at stake, that it's about more than just statues. What do you have to say, Alex?
Yeah, so I think the real issue here is that the two parties have divided so heavily and that we can't have a civil discussion anymore. I think it's okay to say, hey, this guy, you know, fought for slavery. It's part of our history. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just there. Put it in a museum if that's where it belongs. Just talk about where it belongs in a civil way. And, you know, if we can't agree on that and we resort to violence to fight it out, that's the real issue here. We have to be willing to step past where our forefathers fought onto new ground and, you know, come together.
Al, do you have a reaction to what the caller says?
I think the Charlottesville monument, I think Heather Heyer's death has dramatically changed the calculus for whether we should keep monuments or not. I often think monuments are Confederate monuments are more artifacts of history than places of contemporary sort of political mobilization. But this weekend has begun to make me change that thinking, and I suspect what we'll see going forward is a lot more monuments coming down.
I want to ask all of our guests now, what's the way forward? Barbara, do you have an idea about what the way forward might be?
I think, I don't know if this is possible in our divided political climate, but I do think thinking about what a person is primarily known for, when they lived, was their primary legacy something that was contested in the time and place when they lived, such as slavery was during the Civil War. And again, I'm lifting a little bit here from some of these principles that certain colleges and universities have put forward, but that to me is why it's so obvious that Washington and Jefferson, for instance, are in a different place. They lived in a different era, and their primary legacy is not that they were slave owners, although I would add, of course, that Monticello and Mount Vernon, among other places, have done a wonderful job in recent years in offering excellent interpretations of their role as slave owners.
Al, I'm going to turn to you, if you could, in about 30 seconds or less, tell me what you think the way forward might be.
I hope these decisions will be made at the local level, and I think this is really a question of sort of morality, of how people balance the importance of remembering the bad old days with the sort of important impulse to take down relics that were put up to honor slave owners.
And Michael, you get the last word.
Yeah, I like that bit about local government, and I think that observers, people who are also in positions of local government in places that haven't done it yet, places can look to Baltimore and can look to New Orleans and see, like, life in that city hasn't stopped. They haven't completely erased the history of that city or the region. It's moved to a better place as a result of the monuments coming down. So there are already some lessons that show us that removing these Confederate monuments is a good thing and not some sort of a historical catastrophe.
That's Boston historian Barbara Berenson, author of Boston in the Civil War, Hub of the Second Revolution. Thank you, Barbara, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we've had Al Brophy, a professor of law at the University of Alabama and an author of University, Court, and Slave, Pro-Slavery Thought in Southern Colleges and Courts and the Coming of Civil War. Professor Brophy, thank you.
I enjoyed it.
And actually, that very last comment was from Michael Jeffries, Associate Professor of American Studies at Wellesley and author of Paint the White House Black, Barack Obama and the Meaning of Race in America. Professor Jeffries, thanks for coming in again.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston.